Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today I am joined by co-founder of the World Happiness Summit, Karen Guggenheim. We'll be discussing how psychology and neuroscience can influence our happiness, as well as Karen's new book, Cultivating Happiness, Overcome Trauma and Positively Transform Your Life. Karen, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you so much, Adrian. Thank you for having me. And I'm so, so excited to share with your listeners a little bit about my story and the bit I've learned in the last decade or so on the science of happiness.
Well, I think a great place to start would be, perhaps before we even dive into the book, actually, if we could start by telling us about the World Happiness Summit. I'll be honest, since reading about it, it sounds like something that is right up my street. It is something that I really want to go to myself. So can you tell us about it? And most importantly, actually, why you created the summit?
Absolutely. So first of all, you're most welcome to come. That's important to get that out of the way. You know, my story really is from unhappiness. And so, unfortunately, 11 years ago, last week, actually, I lost my husband. He died suddenly from the flu. So it's very much like COVID now that, that 2 years ago, how people were dying from COVID, the intubation, all those different things, the pneumonia. And in less than 10 days, he was gone. And so at first, it was just shock and trauma because it happened very, very quickly. And losing an identity as well. I think that what we don't realize, and when somebody like that so close to you dies, your identity dies in a way. Like I wasn't a wife anymore. And so these other things, you know, just happened so quickly. And at first, I didn't really want to live. And then I remembered that I had children. And I said, oh my goodness, I have to live. I have to live for my kids, you know. How unfair would it be for them to lose both parents? And we know that you can be living but not alive. And so I wanted to make sure that I was fully present and alive for them. And that to me meant I had to find a way to be happy. I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know about the science of happiness. I didn't know it was a thing. But I knew I had to shoot for the stars because it was such a deep, deep disappointment, loss, everything, fear. I lost my husband, but also my best friend. So it's really, really hard for that to happen. And I chose that I was going to be happy, and I didn't know how to do that. But I knew that what I could control, and this is where I begin my journey, is what can I control out of the situation? I can't control what happened, okay? But my reaction, what's my reaction? Well, my reaction is that through purpose and meaning, I'm going to find my way to happy. Mm. And then it was, but first pain. So when you experience post-traumatic growth, it's not that you bypass the pain. You feel the pain, okay? And guess what? For human beings, it's okay and healthy to feel all human emotions, okay? The key is not to get stuck, and also it's about how you act on the emotion that you have. So I decided to build a new identity in a sense. So 4 months later, I was getting an MBA at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. I had always wanted to do that, but I got married young and I didn't go there. I went to do my first degree in the University of Miami. And then I decided to see it this way. I didn't go to Georgetown because I got married. And now that he wasn't here, I was going to go in homage to him, in his legacy. So again, it was bad enough that he died. It was bad enough he can't see his kids grow up and he had to miss out. And I could do something about that. I could make, you know, my kids' life as best as possible. You know, the family structure was broken forever, but I could show up to my life and start to make decisions that could build something. And I accidentally became happy again. And I did that through different habits that I developed. I also started to see what happy people do. So happy people take a shower, happy people say yes to dinner, happy people then give permission to smile and to laugh. And I talk about this in the book. And then I graduated and I had a great job on paper. My first master's is in journalism and in communications. And so I used to do international crisis work, et cetera, but there was no purpose and meaning in that. You know, it was okay, but I was like, I didn't survive the death of my husband to put myself together again. And then to have this kind of mundane work experience where it was, you know, a bit toxic, et cetera. And I met a group of people that were volunteers, and they were talking about a World Happiness Summit. So as a concept. And I was like, okay, this is a nice idea, et cetera. And then I heard the motto, I choose happiness. And I said, wait a second, I did that. I actually did that. So it's not a motto, I did it. And so then I started to read and learn and educate myself on the science behind happiness and well-being. And read the work of the experts that now I work with. And I saw it was a thing, and that it's teachable and learnable if we define happiness in the way that we're talking about subjective well-being and not just, you know, fun and pleasure, which is part of it, but not all of it. And I quit my job 6 weeks later, and I created Wahasu, which is the company that organizes and produces the World Happiness Summit. And we had the first summit 6 months later in Miami, and it was a huge success.
Well, thank you for sharing that journey and that story. And I've read the book, so, you know, I know how you describe it. And I think for anyone, when I read the book, especially the start, I haven't had the same experience as you, but I've had some, you know, traumatic, shocking experiences in my life. And I often think that for many people, they have, you know, whether it's when they're young, when they're old, in between, some people more than others. Sadly, I feel like adversity comes at some stage for in people's lives. And I think when you are able to share how you felt at the time, you know, it's not just about, you know, looking, you know, 10 years later. I think sometimes when people are in that moment, when they're experiencing the raw pain, the grief, the loss, the thing, you know, it's so hard to kind of, you don't want to hear about happiness, you don't want to hear about, you know, X, Y, and Z. You're just in this darkness that can be so overwhelming. And there's two things you said that I actually wrote down. One we said, living but not alive, and the other when you mentioned post-traumatic growth. And I kind of want to ask you about that first of all, because I think this idea of living but not alive. So when something traumatic happens, when someone, you know, loses somebody, or when something shocking happens and you are in that state of shock, I think it's easy for people to just exist and to be living, maybe for years, living in fear, living actually with anger, you know, why did this happen? This is not fair. This, why did this happen to me? Or, you know, why did this happen to my mom or my dad or my husband, my wife? And then that fear of like, something else bad might happen. I can't be happy. I can't experience life. I can't live, like you said, be alive. And they just exist. And sadly, I think some people, that becomes the rest of their life. So I guess how, yeah, if how can people, I guess, take that post-trauma and it could become growth instead of being stuck and being stuck in that, this is my life forever now and it will never be, I'll never, you know, recover really from it.
So first of all, the being alive but not living, that is when we numb ourselves, right? So we numb ourselves from not feeling the pain, but the thing is that your body doesn't know. So you're just numbing for emotion. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel joy, right? You don't feel anything. And sometimes we get in behaviors that then are numbing that. So we may eat, we may drink, we may gamble, we may do a lot of things that are then taking you further and further and further away from where you have the potential of going, which is to growth, right? And so it's so important to feel the pain. And it's like you don't want to go there. You don't want to walk into that moment. And whether it's a divorce or you lost your job or you lost your house or you lost the expectation of something you wanted to have. And everybody's pain is their own and subjective. So something that may be little to you is big to me, or vice versa. And so there's no judgment in that. But I think the process is very, very important. And one thing that is so, so, so important is do not choose the victim narrative, okay? Even when we're victimized, for a period of time, it's, you know, okay to feel like a victim, okay? But eventually you have to get up because that is a killer for happiness, you know? And so it's like, okay, this was unfair. Like, for example, in the case of my husband, there were medical errors made, you know? They made mistakes. Did they do it on purpose? No, you know? But the outcome was pretty bad. You know, and then I know there's, you know, the whole chapter on forgiveness and, you know, there's not much you can do with that. So accepting the pain is what, and it's not natural because you do not want to go there.
Yeah.
And the other thing, especially with loss, is that we have a belief, I think, that if we let go of the pain, we're going to forget the person, right? Like they didn't matter, to give them this place. And I know I've had friends who are became later widows, and I've seen them a year after the event, and they were wearing the wedding ring. And I said, why are you wearing that? You know, you're not married. And then it was to hold on to the person, but the person's not coming back. And you can remember them in a different way. But as you're living, as your husband, it's not, because they're not currently your husband or your wife. And that doesn't mean that it can't transform into a different kind of love. So I have experienced, and it takes time, that's the other thing, it takes time, that the love has grown, actually, that I feel, not only that I feel for my husband, but I, in a way, I feel his love for me, right? In a different way, not a romantic love, but the sense of feeling okay, or harmony, or peace, or strength, whatever you want to call it, but it's only because I let go of some of the pain.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, so many things. And I have lots of questions, of course, to talk to you about, but I feel like I could talk with you all day, Karen. But I do want to talk to you about happiness, and I am an optimist. And I think it's interesting, actually, even this conversation so far, sometimes, because people would always, anyone who would meet me would say that I'm an optimist, and I tend to, yeah, look on the bright side, see the good. And actually, it's interesting, because if people know more about my life and my story, they're like, wow, how could you be optimistic? They assume if you're an optimistic, happy person, you've just always had an easy, happy life. And sometimes it's the other way around. Actually, I think adversities and challenges and traumas can make you so much more aware of living your life, so much more grateful in the true sense of the word, and actually, strangely enough, so much more happy. So I guess you probably get asked the question, you know, if I ask somebody what makes you happy, they might be able to tell me some things, people, places that they associate with a feeling of happiness. And we know that happiness is something that we all experience in a different way, but universally we know that it's a good thing and we want to feel it, we want to feel more of it. So I guess my first question around this is, what are some common mistakes that you think people make when they consider what happiness is and how they can have more happiness in their lives?
Well, the first one is that they think they can feel positive emotion all the time, right? And you can't. We're not made that way. So there will be things that are painful, or disappointments, or sadness, or anger, you know, and that's all okay. They're feelings. They're feelings. They come and they go. It's not who you are. You know, if you look at Susan David's work, if you say, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling sad, as opposed to I am sad, then you're having an identity with it, right? And so it's a feeling. And I think that we don't give enough education on that's actually a feeling. Like, oh, okay, I thought that would be something that lives inside me until it doesn't live inside me anymore, accidentally, by chance. That there's, you know, how are things that I can implement in my life that I can make that feel better? And do I want to? That's where you have to have that conversation with yourself, right? You were right. You were wronged. You're 100% right. Do you still want to feel that way, or are you going to move on? Doesn't mean you need to be with that person. We'll never make that okay. But what do you want? And what do you want then? In my case, I thought, you know, I want to be the hero of my life, you know, and so I'm going to go and do that. I'm going to find the cape and I'm going to go and do that. I'm not going to wait for somebody to give me the cape. I'm going to go get it.
Yes.
And I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
But just showing up, life unfolds. But you have to say yes.
Yeah.
And it helps to have a purpose. And so, for example, the theme of the World Happiness Summit this year in London is purpose. And it's one of the elements of well-being. So, you know, again, to your point of happiness, in the way that I have been able to learn and the way that I see it, and also in speaking with the experts, that if you look at it as a subjective well-being, it has a cognitive and an emotional perspective. So, you know, the cognitive, that's a part of purpose and meaning and relationships and being mindful, being present. So if you live in the past or in the future, forget it. Okay, it's not going to work for you. You have to live in the now. You can plan for the future and revisit the past. But if you live there, it's really hard to be happy sustainably. And then there's the positive emotion, which is the one that we love. Joy, pleasure, it's amazing, fun, right? And so it's kind of nuanced in the TED talk that I did last year. I talked about how I see life through this prism, right? Because my life used to be black and white. Mm. Okay, I was happy, I guess, but I was not fully alive, even though when I was married, because I didn't realize that there was so much of that I could guide my life into. Well, I want to feel amazing. But I was waiting, sitting on the bus bench, you know, waiting for the happiness bus to pick me up. I didn't know that you had to walk to it, or sometimes that bus was a bicycle and sometimes it wasn't yellow, but it was red or whatever. And so, you know, I became an active participant, and I'm not always right in it, and I fall, right? But again, it's the words that you choose and the language that you choose. So, for example, is that failure? Or how's that learning? So human beings learn through failure. But we just have this word that feels really awful.
Yeah.
But it's really learning. And that's growth. And guess what? Nature is growing all the time. Right now, as you and I are talking, we're growing. You know, our hair is becoming a little bit thinner.
And whiter.
We're becoming a little more wrinkled, you know? And it's like, that's life. Yeah. And so you begin to see these nuances to life and to the life that how can I create the life I want to have?
Yes.
You know?
And you said active participant. And I think that's so important, is, you know, not waiting. Okay, is this going to make me happy? Is that going to make me happy? Is this, you know, going to be a joyful, happy day? Actually, active participant. Like, what am I doing today? What am I choosing? Who am I, you know, spending my time with? How am I showing up? What am I choosing? And I think, I guess, inversely to that, which kind of goes alongside this question about happiness, is unhappiness. Because often if you ask someone, okay, what makes you happy? And as we said, joy, these things, you might say, oh, this makes me happy, that makes me happy. But I think if we don't look at the other side of the coin, which is, okay, what things, even just in your day-to-day life, what things make you feel unhappy? Like, for example, if someone says, okay, you know, these are the things that I do to make me happy, but the things that make me unhappy, maybe going to work in a job that's unfulfilling, maybe watching the news late at night before I go to bed and seeing some terrible news, mm-hmm. maybe actually spending time with that person makes me feel bad, or drinking too much alcohol and wake up in the morning and I feel terrible. So mm-hmm. We can also acknowledge the things that make us unhappy, that I guess drain our happiness, then yeah, mm-hmm. there's always two sides to the equation, and maybe we overlook that. So do you think it's important to pay attention to the things that are making us unhappy, and again actively participate to change those things?
Absolutely. So I believe we should be aware on as much of ourselves as possible and how we interact with our environment, right? And so, for example, if you're rude, you might not be invited to dinner. That happens, right? So again, it's sometimes we're living in a society where people are not careful with how they interact with others, right? And then you're a victim because so-and-so did this and that, and you don't see your... So that may make you feel, make increase, you know, your unhappiness or your feelings of rejection. But But something that's really important is to see, and you were talking about, like, for example, drinking too much or not having sleep. So if you can start to become aware, like, okay, if I watch the news at 11 o'clock at night, I can't sleep, because we all know that the news are not going to tell you what's going well. It's not going to tell you about the 40,000 flights who made it, but they will tell you on the one that didn't. Yep. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm flying next week. Is it going to fall? Okay, so... And your brain is susceptible last moments at night and very first thing in the morning. So if you have an awareness of that and you have a necessity to see the news, see it at midday. Mm. Control it.
Yes.
Okay? Control it. And then you start to see how you can manage that. And so you saw the news, you're anxious, but it's really important. You really make a choice that you want to do that. Okay, you're anxious. Okay, what can you do afterwards? Well, maybe go for a walk in nature. Because we know that walking in nature is one of the things that primes your biology to feel happiness, to feel well-being, to feel okay. But if you, for example, don't take recovery breaks or micro recovery breaks during the day, if you don't eat well, if you don't drink enough water, if you don't rest, you're going to be overwhelmed. I mean, that's what's going to happen. There's nothing wrong with you. That's normal. Mm. And so what can you do to make that not happen? Well, I'm going to prioritize literally a 5-minute walk outside and look at 4 flowers and then see how you feel. And the thing is that all of these are evidence-based tips, yeah, right? They're also common sense, but you start feeling better. And then you can plot that. You know, when I do this and I'm having, if I scream at my kid or my spouse, even though I'm right, I feel bad. So is there a way that I can say this that doesn't, you know, hurt the other person and myself? Because we know that the number one indicator of how happy you are is your relationships, positive relationships. And so, you know what? Nurture those. And what happens is that sometimes when the people we're closest with, we're sometimes not careful, right? And so if we're tired, if we're hungry, or we're overwhelmed, we might snap because they love us. And so we know that they're going to be there.
Yep.
But, you know, invest, flower that. Like blossom those relationships. Feed them with water and nurture them. Mm. And then see how you feel.
Yeah.
Again, this doesn't mean that you don't have disagreement. This doesn't mean you're going to do what somebody else says. Boundaries are incredibly important for happiness, especially if you're in a toxic relationship at work or in your personal life. There are actions that need to be taken so that you're safe, right? Mm. That's very, very psychological safety and physical safety, of course. But disappointing things are disappointing, okay? And you still have a family, and you have a roof, and you have food, and you're going to a party next week, and. So it depends on you. If you rather ruminate on that, you know, call 15 friends and say how wrong you were, and continue that narrative and go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. See how you feel. Is that making you happier?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about, I think, slowing down your choices. What can I just tell my, what can I control? Mm. What can I control? Especially when something happens big that it's like a negative. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that sucks. But what do I control?
Yeah. And what do I do you next? Know? Because like you said, things exactly will always happen, sadly, in life, exactly, which you go, it sucks. Like you said, this is bad. There's no like silver lining. Yeah. You're just like, this is terrible.
This is bad.
But what do I do next? As you said, you know, I think, and actually the relationships piece you mentioned, you know, how we know that the quality of our interpersonal relationships, how that really does impact well-being above everything else, above our diet, mm-hmm, above exercise. It's the leading, and you know this, but the leading
above money
that contributes to life longevity. So if you want to live long, mm-hmm, you need to, you know, as you said, nurture those relationships. And of course, one of the topics you discuss in the book, and actually when I first went through the chapters, I actually went, oh, I'm going to go to this. I don't always read books in order, especially if it's a book like that. And I was like, ah, okay. And I went straight to that chapter about forgiveness. And I think that I really want to talk about forgiveness. I think it's something that maybe growing up, I was always told, you know, you should forgive people. And my grandma, who is a positive influence in my life. She was, you know, very religious and go to church every week. And it was always this thing of like from God or from church was like, you know, forgive, forgive, forgive. And it was kind of like you just had to do it as opposed to really, really meaning it. But I think that actually for some people, if they have been wronged, if there's been a relationship breakdown, someone's really let them down in their life, someone's, you know, whatever the situation, forgiveness can be so hard. And people can say, you know what, no matter what happens, it can't be undone. I can never forgive this person. And, you know, we've seen, if you know anyone who's really, you know, feels that way, it really has such a detrimental impact on the everything. I feel like even just the structure of their face, you know, you live with this anger, this heaviness, this kind of, you know, it's not good for you. However, it's not always easy to go, okay, in that case, this isn't good for me. I'm going to forgive the person. I think forgiveness is such a complex thing and it relates to our happiness in so many ways. So my question is, why is forgiveness so important and why is it so hard to truly forgive?
Well, first of all, I am going to validate what you said. It is very hard. It is very hard. And that's actually the last topic that we discuss in the World Happiness Summit, because it's like, get all this stuff, you know, to make you ready to understand why it's so important. Is because you gain. You gain, you know? We think, first of all, it's also an awareness of what forgiveness means. It does not mean that what happened is okay.
Or erased.
It may be that what happened could never, ever, ever, ever be okay. No matter what happens, it could never be okay. That we know, we can imagine instances where that's the case, right? So that's the very first thing. And we think that forgiveness is about the other person, and it's not. It's about you. It's about you freeing mental, emotional space for you, for your family, for your kids, for your future, for your career, for your joy, for your peace, for your tranquility, for your growth. Because, you know, it may happen that the person who hurt you, I mean, they're thinking they're the victim, probably, right? So could be that they didn't even notice, or they don't even care, okay? They don't even care. They don't even remember you.
Well, they have an excuse, right? They have an excuse. They have a reason. They have their side of the story, maybe.
Whatever. Yeah. But you are allowing these people to live rent-free in your life, in your brain, in your soul. And so, you know, you go from an act that was awful or unfair, and then it continues by unforgiveness, and it continues. And it's like, I've heard, you know, this, I'm sure you've heard this too, that forgiveness is like me pouring a glass of poison and drinking it myself and expecting you to be poisoned, you know? And one of the reasons why it is so powerful to actually do it, and by the way, you don't have to tell the person even, you can forgive in a letter that you write to yourself, you can forgive in your head, whatever, is that heaviness that you were talking about is lifted. Mm. And then you're like, wow, all that energy of me thinking about that person, I get to think about me. I get to invest it in me. I get to maybe wake up earlier or find another job that I'd rather have or have creativity or write a book or run or see beauty. Because remember that life is based on perception. So if you have decided that this thing is what your life is, or disappointment, or everybody's out to get you, or these, that's what you're going to see. That's it. And so if you are able to pan out and see, well, you know what? I didn't notice that flower over there and that sunset and this person opening the door for me and that other one saying thank you to me and this cute text, right? It's happening, but you're not noticing it because you are consumed with this thing that happened, which I you know, again, it might be, if it's a big hurt, it may take some time to be in that pain, but eventually you need to make a decision where you say, okay, am I going to decide to continue in this? Or am I going to step out of that and say, you know what? I release you and go live wherever you are that is outside of my view, and that's it. And I'm now going to dedicate this energy on myself and the people I care for.
Yeah. Karen, thank you so much. Honestly, I'm like wiping tears from my eyes, and I'm kind of like, honestly, this is a first for me in 5.5 years. I don't think I've ever cried on this podcast. I'm kind of grateful now that it's just audio and no video. But yeah.
Well, you look beautiful.
I was wiping tears from my eyes because I feel like it's, I'll be honest, you know, I feel very, you know, you speak so beautifully, and I think because reading the book and how much you share, I feel like instantly you feel as though, I maybe feel as though I'm able to do that. But I don't know, I just felt really emotional listening to you talk then about the freedom that comes from forgiveness, because I think, as I said at the start, I've always been a very optimistic person who chose to focus on the good things, chose to look mm-hmm. for the good in people, chose to look for happiness, chose to look for joy. And I think I was always... yeah, I think I've been trying for many, many years to maybe forgive my parents. And then when I became a parent myself, I think it almost cemented the other way. It kind of made me go, wow, now that I'm a parent, I could see, you know, this is the role of a parent. This is what you do. You know, mm-hmm. you love a child, you nurture a child, you take care of a child, you put yourself, you know, anything, you put yourself, you know, their needs first, you know, you would take anything for your child. And so I think it dug that wound even deeper, because mm-hmm. instead of forgiving my parents, I thought, wow, like, how could you, you know, really fail and let me down so much? Mm-hmm. But I'm working on it. And like you said, it takes time. It's the, you know, years. And I think actually really true forgiveness is different to saying, okay, cool, I'm going to forgive and forget. You know, actually forgiveness is different, and it's
very
hard
different.
And it's hard. And every time, you know, we just had Mother's Day, or, you know, when it comes mm-hmm. around to, like I said, being a parent myself, I love being a parent. You know, it's the most, one of the most joyful, wonderful things. But I think if you didn't have that parenting from your own parents, when you become a parent, you're kind of like, hey, what, you know, like this, I don't know. It's a complex one, but I hope that anyone listening will kind of think about forgiveness, and whether that is, like I say, whether it's an ex-romantic partner, whether it's a friendship that's let you down, whether it's, I don't know, anything. If you are hanging on to that feeling of unjust and why and anger and, you know, you didn't deserve it, whatever it is. Yeah, I think it's really, really powerful to really spend time. And as you said, like, mm-hmm. write it down, do whatever you need to do, work with a therapist, read books, whatever, so that you don't carry that for the rest of your life, because you don't want to be mm-hmm. 75 years old. I don't want to be 75 years old and still go, you know what, this thing was unfair, or this, you know, because...
But it was, let's say it was. It was unfair. Mm. Now what?
Yeah. And you can't go back
and
change it.
No, it was wrong. It was totally wrong. And now what?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, you're right. You're 100% right. And then what was something that helped me with when somebody hurt me, you know, that in a position where, as you're describing, that it's a person who's supposed to nurture you and take care of you and support you, is that, you know what? If that person could have loved me, they would have, but they probably don't love themselves. So how are they going to love me? That doesn't mean I ever want to do anything with that person or see that person again. But it's just like, it's literally not about you. It's something that did happen to you, but it's really not about you. And so how wonderful and amazing that you're an amazing mother and you have those feelings. Isn't that just glorious? Mm-hmm. And guess what? Your child never, ever has to have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's beautiful. And that, I'm sure, makes you very happy.
Oh, for sure. That's it, for sure. And that's one of the real, as I say, joyful, happy, wonderful, purposeful things in my life, is that I get to create my family now, mm-hmm. you know, and it's beautiful. Yeah. And it's a blessing and something I don't take for granted, you know, that I get to do that. So, wow, therapy for me. I feel like this is a one-to-one therapy, and the listeners hopefully are listening too.
Everybody has something
that
has been unfair done to
them. For sure, for sure. As I say, sometimes more than others.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's talk about how journaling can help us make sense and also rewrite things in our lives, because we've probably heard on this podcast and many others people talk about journaling as a practice and saying, okay, journaling can be good for like coming out of that rumination, it can be good for creative thinking, can be good for lots of things. Mm-hmm. But how can journaling help us to rewrite the narratives of our lives? Our you know, you talked about being the hero in your life. How can journaling help people to go, actually, who am I becoming and who do I want to be? What role do I want to play in my own life?
So there are many, many benefits to journaling, and actually there's a lot of research around that and narratives. There's different kinds, right? And so there's some that are for trauma. So not immediately after the trauma, but a bit after, if you schedule, I think it's like 20 minutes or 15 minutes a day for 5 days and get that out of your system, it's been shown to improve how you feel about it. So then you kind of get it out, you know. Some people do it kind of every day, and that's like their vomit journal. I've heard that from one of the experts. And then, so I did that for a bit when I faced disappointment. And then what I like to do with the way that I journal is to really focus on the I am statements, because you know. My brain goes to sometimes, you know, I'm alone. It's like, okay, no, I'm feeling lonely and I'm going to be with people. And I'm having my friends and I'm going to be in a place where there's positive relationships and it's going to be fantastic. So I try to hedge myself as well for what I want to feel more of. And envision that. And so if you use imagination, we have this amazing, amazing power of imagination. We use it to catastrophize a lot, and we're so good at it. I mean, like, we can describe to the T, like, our fears, right? But what about if you can talk about, like, well, you know, I really would love to have a house with this, and then we can gather in this table where we have dinner together, and wouldn't that be amazing? And then we could share stories and everybody's happy together. And it's not just, it's not frivolous, but it's to also help us rewire that negative brain that we have sometimes, because it goes into these loops, right? And sadly, we live in a world that has a lot of negative news and negative interactions, right? And so before social media, we had news that was slower, right? Yeah. It's like one earthquake and then next week there's another fire. But now you turn on and it's like every fire that happens in the world, every car crash, every fight, everything. And so it's like you feel like bombarded,
yeah,
by this. And so if you're not actively, okay, replenishing and saying, wait a minute, this is beautiful, and there's a whole also research on beauty and savoring and how important that is, and beauty can actually improve your well-being. Mm. So like having flowers or turning on a candle with scent, having some background music,
yeah,
that is all helping your biology to reframe from the loop that you're into, yeah, right? And so journaling helps you rewrite and rewire by discipline. And this is another thing that I'm a firm believer of, is you don't wait to want a journal. You do it by discipline.
Yeah.
So you find out two or three things that really is your thing, whether it's running, it's yoga, it's meditation, it's music, it's walking, whatever is your thing. Get two or three habits, okay, your non-negotiables, and do it like brushing your teeth, because you're not like, well, do I really want to brush my teeth today? I mean, I don't know if I have time, and it may not be a good idea. You brush your teeth by habit. So think of this the same way. Don't wait. Do not wait to be like, oh, I can't wait to sit down in my journal, especially when you're feeling really down.
Yes.
It's like, this is what I do. This is what I do. This is who part of who I am. This is what I do. I sit down 15 minutes with this piece of paper and this pencil, and this is where I'm going.
Yes, yes. You know? That piece of advice right there, if there's one thing you take from this episode, hopefully lots more, but if there's one thing, that discipline piece that you just said, which is don't wait for that non-negotiable, that's what I call it too. And you know, for me, I am a runner and I walk a lot. So it's like every single day mm-hmm. I will walk, and lots of days I'll run, but I walk every day. And so for example, something like this with journaling, like you said, if you know, okay, is there going to be positive benefit to doing this? Yes. Do I have time for this? Yes, you absolutely 100% do, mm-hmm. because we all have time to do loads of other things that we waste time on. But I think that word discipline and non-negotiable is like almost like a homework, a task. You have to do this every day, or every Monday to Friday, whichever days you choose, and you'll be amazed the compounding of that, right? When you do mm-hmm. something like that and you stick to it, and then you exactly. look back after 30 days, 100 days,
exactly,
a year. And it's so transformational, but you would never do it every day if you didn't have to, because you just wait till tomorrow, right? You know, I'll do it another day.
Do a commitment, you know, throw the gauntlet to yourself. So, you know, make a challenge and say, I'm going to do this for 30 days. And then the beautiful thing that biology helps you out, it doesn't become a chore anymore. It's part of your lifestyle. It's who you are. Mm. You know, one of the things, for example, like if I'm frustrated with, you know, my kids or something, you know, something that I've really worked on is, and they're amazing. My kids are amazing, amazing. It's more me. But sometimes, we can be in a challenging conversation is, how do I not raise my voice regardless of what they say? Regardless of what they say, I'm not going to raise my voice. And when you're able to do that, it's like you feel like just like the most amazing giant of a person, because it was hard, because nobody knows how to press your buttons like your kids, okay? These people will get your number immediately. But then you're like, I didn't react. I didn't react.
Self-regulation, right? It's just like, and when you mentioned before, you know, being present, not thinking about the future, ruminating on the part, like we can say these things or hear these things and it makes sense. You know, you said earlier, it's common sense, but it doesn't mean it's easy to apply. You know, it's not easy. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you said around the word imagination. I love the word, even the word imagination, the way it sounds.
It feels good.
I love it. And I always had I can imagine things very in vivid detail. So, you know, you said when people catastrophize, they think about that. But I think a great challenge maybe for the listeners of this show would be to say, okay, spend some time in the morning, you know, when you wake up tomorrow morning, mm-hmm. imagining the best case scenario. And I'm not talking about, you know, perfection or toxic positivity or whatever else people call it now, but I'm just talking about real optimism. Like, allow yourself to go there, allow yourself to get your hopes up, allow yourself to think, instead of like, what's the worst case scenario, how, you know, bad could it be, just imagine how could it be, how could you feel, what are you wearing, what can you see, like real detail. Mm-hmm. And it feels mm-hmm. like on a cellular level, and I know, you know, there is research to support this, but on a cellular level, this is good for us. It's actually good for our well-being to imagine and to think and to almost like daydreaming, right? Einstein used to do that, sit in the chair and daydream and imagine himself on a beam of light, right? It's like, this is a good thing for us to do. It's not a waste of time. It's not idle. You know, as a child, you get told that it's like wasting time. You're doing nothing, but actually you're not doing nothing. You're imagining.
Thinking.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, and to imagine positive things is the best, is, you know, you're giving kind of a map, a roadmap to yourself, you know. And it, again, you know, I became an optimist. I was not an optimist after my husband died, which is kind of strange. But I taught, I guess I taught myself to see the totality of life. So I was honing in on what the disappointment or this didn't work out or that, because I had grown up in a family where that's what was done. So it was natural to me. And many of us, and many of your listeners, have grown up in families or societies that have that. And I'm Latin. So for example, if you tell a Latin person like, oh my God, I just had the most amazing, every single thing is going my way, they were like cross themselves and be like, oh my God, you're going to get killed right now. You're going to go outside and a bus is going to run you over. So imagine, you can't even savor your happiness because now you're destroyed it by saying that everything went well.
The British version of that is if someone says to you like, oh, everything's going well, you know, I love my job, my kids are doing good in school, people go, oh, good for you. Like you're boastful. People don't like that. They kind of go, you can't be happy all the time. Like, you know, you're not, British people don't celebrate like joyful, happy people either. They kind of want to pull them down a peg and say, hey, hey, hey.
But then you miss it. That's the thing. You miss it. And that's to me, the real tragedy of life is to miss it happening right in front of you. And we all know people like this who complain and they miss it. Mm. And you know what? This is not a dress rehearsal. Like, this is it. This is our lives. And so there's so many opportunities. There's so much beauty. There's a lot of challenges and a lot of hard things. And whether it's economic or the conflicts happening around the world or environmental sustainability, there is so many things that are challenges. And there are so many wonderful things happening in our lives. So the thing is to come at it, I believe, through a strengths perspective. So how can I put myself together in the best way possible so that I can then help, you know, with the challenges that we're living? So my small contribution is with the World Happiness Summit. And so bringing that event that happened in my life that was scary, disappointing, anger making, sad, catastrophic. Just, I could go on. And then how can I contribute, right? How can I contribute to something that has helped me and can help other people? And how do I put myself together in a way that I can serve? And also, we haven't talked about this, but there's also the altruism loop. So you help, you want, you're unhappy, you want to do one thing to become happier, do something for somebody else. See how you feel. Mm. Do something for somebody else. You're not feeling good, you're feeling lonely, call somebody and say, hey, how are you feeling today? You know, can I do something for you?
Yeah.
See how you, and then again, how do you feel when you do something like that? It's incredibly empowering, especially if you're feeling down. Mm.
And I'm so lucky, Karen, because this is my work. So as you said, your contribution is the World Happiness Summit and mine is the Power Hour podcast and, you know, other things that I do. But this, especially when I think back to why I started the show, it was for that reason, to hear people like yourself, to encourage the listeners. I didn't know whether it was going to be 20 listeners. And now it's, you know, almost 5 million people have listened. It's like actually to contribute and say, encourage people, motivate people, inspire people. And it's not always, that's not from me, that's from the guests, but that's, yeah, I'm mm-hmm. so lucky because I get to do that with people like you.
You have a great platform, you know, you have a great platform and you bring in these different perspectives, and I'm really, really honored that you have me today, you know, to help, you know, your listeners and to help people share this message that life, you know, life can feel a bit better. It can feel better. We can be happier. We can't be happy all the time. That's not the way the thing works. Yeah. But we can feel happier and we can contribute and it's not that bad, yeah. You know, when you show up.
Well,
you get your hands dirty.
Yes. Well, this is the Power Hour, so I have to ask you, Karen, if you could share with us, my final question for you is, what does the first hour, the Power Hour, typically include at the start of your day?
100% the most important hour of my day, 100%. And I've made it so. So I don't check my phone. So I actually stop checking my phone at 9:30 at night and don't check it in the morning until after the Power Hour. I make myself a cup of coffee with oat milk. I savor the smell, the touch of the cup, the moment where I take the pleasure of taking the first sip. And then I read something motivational. Sometimes I read the same book, I don't know, 10 times, because it takes me a while to go deeper into what it's really saying. And I highlight and I journal on the things that I've read, the thoughts that come in. And so sometimes, most of the time, it's really about something that I'm thinking about, you know, that I want to then write about or that I want to implement in at the summit or in the programs that we provide. And there's just, if we're talking about imagination, that's where like I have so much creativity because I'm not diverted. I haven't freaked out myself yet by looking at my email, you know? And so I'm totally in the moment. So I'm having that cup of coffee, I'm reading that, and I'm journaling and writing notes. And in that moment, I just feel like everything's possible, you know?
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing with us all. And thank you so much for giving us your time. Of course, the book is out. The book is out now. I was just thinking about the date. The book is out now. So, of course, I'm sure people can get the book online in all good bookstores. It is Cultivating Happiness, Overcome Trauma and Positively Transform Your Life. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will be back next week with another episode. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. And you have made me happy with this conversation. Thank you so much for having me on. And it was wonderful. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.